This episode, we're going to go through just an outline of how I like to look at leads, what we like to do to analyze those leads, things to keep in mind so that when it is time to start putting together the offers.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm Nicole Kimangian. I'm here with Cody Richard and the host of this show, Jeff Rappaport. This is episode 263, and today we're going to cover how to write multiple offers. Before we get started, I wanted to mention some of our resources. If you're looking for a mentor, visit roimentors.com to learn more about Jeff's apprentice program and the Creative Financing Academy. For networking and questions, make sure you join the Creative Financing Podcast community on Facebook. The second Thursday of every month, don't miss Jeff's free creative financing class on Zoom. If you're local to the Salt Lake area, we host an in-person meetup at Club 90 in Sandy, Utah. Details in the description below.
Thank you, Nicole. It's great to have both of you back. And we'll start a new series today on how to write multiple offers. And I know both of you have done this, and it's not easy at first, is it?
No.
They tend to look a lot alike, right? And I see a lot of newer investors that are starting to learn creative financing, trying to put together multiple offers, and they look very, very similar. So we're going to go over a couple of different things to hopefully help write multiple offers and be able to make them at least different enough. And what we're trying to accomplish, I think sometimes we get on this idea that we have to write multiple offers, and they really don't benefit us or the seller anymore. So we should probably decide, hey, we're only writing multiple offers if maybe it solves a problem for the seller and or us or both. There's some kind of benefit to us. Otherwise, there's really no need for it. And I think sometimes we get so wrapped up that we got to write two offers, three offers, four offers, whatever the case may be. And we're losing sight of what we're trying to actually make happen. So this episode, we're going to go through just an outline of how I like to look at leads, what we like to do to analyze those leads, things to keep in mind so that when it is time to start putting together the offers, but we have some information that we can use. And I think that will be helpful. And then our next episode, I'm going to hand this example over to both Cody and Nicole, and I'm going to let them come up with multiple offers. We'll see how that goes. So hopefully you like this new series. Let's get started. You guys have never heard this from me before, right? Determine your potential exit strategies when you're looking at these kinds of leads.
Totally new concept.
I figured. The reason that it keeps coming up is I find it to be important. I just listed, you could have more exit strategies than this. To be honest, I don't even use all of these. I'm a wholesaler primarily. We wholesale to rehabbers, to landlords, and we actually even wholesale to owner-occupants on occasion. I do some wholesale on occasion as well where, hey, we didn't quite get the price at a wholesale fee, but we got enough equity. The property's in decent condition. Maybe it just needs a little cleanup or it's dated and we can actually just go put it on the market and sell it probably for more than what we would wholesale it for. One of the other potential exit strategies, buy and hold. And buy and hold could be buy and hold long term. It could be a lease option. Doesn't really matter. Rehabbing, you could actually rehab the property yourself. Wraps, which is, we've talked about that in depth recently, where we potentially buy on terms, sell on terms, a lot of times to an owner-occupant. Short-term rentals, novations, all of these things are potential exit strategies, and there's plenty more that you could add to this list. Use the ones that you would use, right? So for me, it'd be the wholesale, the hotel. It might be buy and hold, although I don't really do that, but I'd be looking at it as from a landlord's perspective. Rehab, it would have to be pretty minor, and then wraps. Those are pretty much 3, 4, 5 exit strategies that I would be looking at. And you guys might be looking at something even less than that, right? Because you might not do all of this.
Yeah, primarily just a couple.
Yeah, same.
Again, this would be a review, but I figured we're going to go do this anyway, and it's a good review right now. If we think the property could be a good rental, if we're looking at it in terms of cash flow, then it really doesn't matter if it's a single family home, if it's a multifamily, 2 to 4 units, or apartments or storage or mobile home parks or an industrial park, anything that brings in money. I wanted to determine the NOI, the net operating income. This is a great place to start to see if it would fit with what you're trying to do. And the equation is pretty easy. NOI is gross rents, so whatever the rents are currently, minus whatever vacancy, minus expenses. And expenses do not include debt service in this case. And most of the expenses that we're going to be dealing with are taxes, insurance, maintenance, repairs, maybe reserves or CapEx, management, maybe marketing, utilities, and then anything else. As the property type may get bigger, there's going to be a little more in expenses, but do not include debt service.
And just to clarify, debt service is like the mortgage payment or any monthly payment you're making on the property for that.
That is correct, yes. Let's take, but once we figure out the NOI, once you determine the NOI, divide it by 12. When we figure out the NOI, we're figuring it out per year. And now if we divide it by 12, that's the amount of money that we have left to allocate toward debt service and cash flow. So if we were thinking, hey, do we want to buy this property and keep it or hold it in some manner? We definitely want to make sure that there's going to be ample cash flow for us to want to stay in it. If we're going to be wholesaling it to a landlord, they're going to want to know that there's significant cash flow. And sometimes the NOI doesn't provide us enough money to allocate enough for debt service and cash flow and make everyone happy. So that's why I like to do it this way. Let's say that we determine that we have a property that's got a $42,000 per year NOI, and we divide it by 12, it's $3,500. That's the amount of money that we can allocate toward debt service and cash flow. We can do it in any way that we want, but we got to make it work for the seller, and we got to make it work for either us or our buyer. Let's say that the asking price on this property was $500,000. Would you be interested in this, Cody, if you had an NOI of $42,000 on a $500,000 property, and would that work?
Yeah,
probably.
I'd be interested in it.
Yeah. Let's do a quick calculation. And when I say I am just trying to gauge where a payment would be on something that, hey, if I'm going to pay $500, maybe we'd have a 10% down payment where I would be offering 10% to the seller, and the seller would then be financing $450,000. And I'm just going to figure out a range. So interest rates today are probably a little over 6.5% for owner-occupied loans. For non-owner, they're probably still over 7.25%, something like that. I'm not putting in what the rates are today. I'm putting in something that I want to know, hey, this is on the lower end, right? This is I'm taking a 3.5% and a 5% range, and it could be a 4% and a 5.5% range. It can be whatever you want. I'm just trying to gauge what would be a payment within a reasonable range so that I know where I want to be, what would make sense. Okay, so I just figured out 30-year amortization, 3.5% and 5%. So I have a range of $2,020 to $2,400 a month, principal and interest. Okay, so to me, that's a pretty decent range to work within. And I've got room that I can do that. This would be more toward the debt service, right? This is what we're looking at. What can we offer the seller that might make sense? Now, maybe the seller is willing to take $1,800 a month. Well, if that's the case, then you know that there's going to be plenty of potential cash flow left over. There may be other times where the seller wants more like $100 a month, and that doesn't leave as much cash flow. That's what this whole process is for, is trying to determine what you can do and maybe give you a little leeway so that you can structure offers a little differently. Right? So if we offered the seller $2,600, which would be more than both of these, there'd still be $900 a month cash flow for the buyer or us, whatever the case may be. And that's $10,800 net per year. If we're making $10,800 and let's say that we had to put down $80,000, that we would then do a quick calculation of what's 10,800 divided by 80. That would be basically our cash on cash return, right?
13. My brain can't do that math right now.
13.5%. That way I know, hey, if I can give a little more cash flow to my buyer, then maybe I could also raise the down payment that I could give to the seller, right? Because I still got to add in, if I'm wholesaling and I want to still add in a fee. Let's say that I offered the seller 50 in this case, and I wanted to make 30, that now 80,000 would be the down payment that the buyer would have to bring in. That would be a 13.5% cash on cash return. Does that work? Yeah, that's pretty good. Not great, yeah. Not spectacular, but solid, right? Pretty good. If I now passed on $1,000 a month, that would be $12,000 per year. And now if I had to up the down payment a little bit, $10,000, I could still make that kind of deal work. So these are some of the calculations I want you to be aware of.
Yeah, and I've noticed a lot of times if you're like new to writing an offer, I feel like some people just get right into it and try to put like, yeah, I'll do 10% down, right. 5% interest, and like that should work, right?
Yeah.
Instead of looking at the back end, like you said, and saying, does this range work? Okay, if it does work, where does it put me in terms of cash on cash? Now that work for an end buyer? So doing that before you put an actual offer together that you'll take to a seller.
Even if you did it, you know, kind of what you're suggesting, Cody, where, you know, people are just throwing numbers at things and seeing what sticks. If you at least run it through some of the calculations, you'll say, well, this is way out of whack. This isn't going to work. And at least have an idea of what needs to be fixed. It's when you don't run it through any calculations. And, you know, I have some students that have been writing offers, and one student is offering 20% down almost every time. I'm trying to help him understand that 20% down's not really going to work that well for you in a number of different ways, whether you're trying to buy and hold yourself or if you're trying to wholesale, which kind of leads us into this next slide, which is what are some of the variables that we can change in our offers? And this is pretty straightforward. We can certainly change the purchase price, right? It can go up or down. And to be honest, depending on the situation, the purchase price may be the least important variable that we're dealing with here. And, you know, if we were trying to do it as a rehab, there's got to be a certain amount of equity to make sense. If there's not enough equity, we can't keep raising the purchase price. But if we have a different exit, we may be able to change the purchase price. If we want it as a buy and hold, or we're going to sell as a wrap to an owner occupant, down payment isn't going to matter as much. We can overpay as long as we structure the rest of the terms the right way. Down payment's kind of crucial. The down payment makes it so we can get in light and we can either wholesale and make a fee on top of it, or that we can buy it with not as much money out of pocket. Doesn't really make sense if we're offering down payments of 20-25% and let's say 5% interest. And it's still better than the bank, but why would we be doing that? And one of the things that you should know is that, hey, down payment should really, this is where we have to go back and look at what are our potential exit strategies, right? Because we're going to sell to a landlord. Landlords are used to paying 20 or 25%. We can get more from them down. Owner occupants are more likely going to pay around the 10% mark. So if we're offering 20% to the seller, we better not be trying to sell to an owner-occupant. Okay, so interest rate. I make low interest rate offers all the time. And yeah, we get some pushback. It's not unheard of for someone to say, well, you're only offering us 2%, and you know, I could get 4.5 right now at the bank. And I'm telling you, just learn how to deal with those objections. And one of the ways that I would deal with it is, so interest rate's important to you. Well, yeah. Well, you do realize that the more interest I pay you, the more tax you get to pay on that interest, correct? That's kind of defeating the purpose, isn't it? What if we just raised the price? If we raised the price and kept the interest little to none, would that be okay with you? Hey, if we could sell this at 4.5%, 5%, more than likely someone would come buy this property from you right now and go get it financed. Financing is going to mean that you're going to take less money for the same property. Any interest that I'm offering you based on the price that I've offered you is already top dollar. Understanding how to deal with some of the objections will really help you in terms of dealing with interest rate. But I rarely get into like a major situation about interest.
Monthly? Yeah, I think having multiple offers can help on that as well, because with the interest rate, say your offer, hey, I met your purchase price, I gave you a down payment close to what you wanted, but
yep,
it resulted in a lower interest rate. You can see on this other one, we came in a lower down payment, lower purchase price, but we got your 5% interest.
Right.
So if I raise that interest rate, you can see what's going to happen on the other side.
100%. That is absolutely correct. So one of the ways to definitely change your offers, right? So the monthly payment. Well, we did that exercise figuring out the NOI to hopefully determine a range. As long as we're within that range, it doesn't matter if we're on the lower end or on the higher end, unless we're trying to accomplish something. Lower end would mean more cash flow. Higher end means more principal pay down. What are we trying to accomplish, or are we trying to get that balance? And then term. This is something I feel people just don't think about, is where do you end up at the end of the term? Are you at least 75-80% loan to value? Because if the goal is at the end of the term, you or someone else has to refinance and you're not at 75-80%, what does that mean? What does that mean, Nicole?
You're going to owe money.
You're going to bring in more money. And for me, the goal is down payment is all the money we're bringing in, right? And when we have to refinance, then we go try to find the best rates. And that's, we're not bringing any more money in. That's not the goal. Make sure that you understand, you know, think about it right now. We're in a market where right now interest rates are still rising. Prices are still coming down. Some areas more rapidly than others. But that's where the market is heading right now. And it may be heading for this way for the next year, two, I don't know. Or it might be 2 months and it may start heading in a different direction. But right now, I know it's heading toward higher interest rates. So I want to make sure that I feel like this is a cycle. A cycle can last a few years to 5-7 years. And the longer the term, more likely you will be out of this cycle into a different one. The different one could be lower interest rates and higher prices again. So if that's the case, the longer we can get, if we can get not a 5-year term, I feel like that's right on the fringe, a 7 or 8 year term, that's typically going to be long enough that, hey, at some point during that time frame, you should be able to refinance at a reasonable rate. And 10 years might be better than 8, but 7-8, I think, becomes the new minimum if you're staying in this now.
Yeah, and I'd say, I mean, for that term, there's somebody on the back end. If you're selling to an owner-occupant and you don't take that into account, there's someone on the back end that could really get screwed over if the loan-to-value is 85%. And
right,
they don't have that money to come out of pocket and refinance. And you don't want that for them. You don't want that reflection on your business or even the industry as a whole. And so it's definitely important to take into account.
Totally agree. And that's why I try to stay away from interest only type payments, because now we're relying strictly on appreciation. And hey, for the last 5 years, appreciation worked great. I don't know that it's going to work great for the next 5 years. And I don't want to bank on appreciation. I want to be, if this property doesn't really move another, really anything over the next 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever, will we be at 75, 80% loan to value? So again, this is so important. I think that both of you have gone through my apprentice program, and you probably both said at some point, Jeff makes a really big deal about this and it's probably not that important. And it's about learning how to truly talk to sellers and really being able to listen, ask the right questions, dig deeper, and get the answers to questions that help you write offers. I'd feel bad if I didn't put something in here about being good at finding out the seller's needs first and foremost, and then wants, because the more we're able to get them that kind of stuff, the more likely they're going to say yes to us. So how well did we pre-screen the seller? These are all questions that you probably need to ask yourself. Did you find out how much money they need now? That would be the down payment. If they told you they don't need any money now, then you just got yourself no money down deal. And if you don't ask that, I don't know how you know it. Did you find out if they're willing to carry long term, 10 years or more, or do they need a short term? Did you push back on the short term? Like, I don't know that that's something that we can do. And here's why, because if the market comes to that, and whether it's me or someone else in the property, and if we can't refinance, this whole deal blows up for everyone. I don't want that. Do you want that? Do you understand the seller's situation? Sometimes there is a need for something, right? I need $12,000, but I need it next week. You know, sometimes people want you to believe that they need a certain price, and that might not be quite the same thing, but when they're talking about a specific need that they need money for, that's something that you really got to listen to. Can you truly solve the seller's problem with your offers? I find that a lot of the offers I review or see is very one-sided, right? Mm-hmm. It's all for them, the person writing the offer, which, hey, if that works for you, great. But my guess is you will get a lot more deals and probably a lot more pretty good deals if you start taking into account what I can do to help the seller. Taking into account everything the seller needs and wants, can you structure something that'll also work for you and or an end buyer, right? That's taking in everyone's needs, right? Makes no sense for me if the seller says, hey, there's no way I can't take any less than 50% down. I need it. If I don't get it, I'm not selling. And that doesn't work for me. So that would mean move on or follow up or make an offer and get rejected and then follow up. But you've got to make sure that if you're wholesaling it, that it works for you, so you can add in a fee, works for the seller, and it's going to work for a buyer. If you're the end buyer, it's going to still work for seller and buyer. Okay. Just like a cash price does.
Yeah. I've seen some comments and questions in our Facebook group, people like asking, how do we convince basically a seller to agree to like something like sub two or whatever? And it's, you can't convince anyone to do anything. It's more about finding those needs. So the questions are super important. And if you're trying to convince someone, then you're basically chasing that lead and it just doesn't work that way.
You know, one of the things that I find, that's a super good point, Nicole. One of the things that I've learned over the years is that I don't want to try to convince anyone of anything. I'm not trying to convince someone to sell me the property. I'm not trying to convince them to do creative finance. What I'm trying to do is figure out what's going on, how I can provide solutions, and if it's a good fit, now let's do some business, or let's at least get serious about how do we make this happen. Now, if someone told me they don't like creative finance, or that, you know, they're not open to that, then I'll make a cash offer and it's probably going to be much lower than what they want. And then I'm going to bring it up again that I can get a lot closer to where you want to be if you're willing to do it this way. I just did that, but we were under contract for a commercial property for cash and my due diligence was running out. And I told them I got to either cancel or we got to restructure the terms. And he said, I think they're more open to terms now. Great. I don't care when we get that accepted, that now needs to. So we've been going back and forth trying to work out a deal going forward, taking it from cash to terms. Not that I made them plenty of terms offers to begin with. They didn't want it then, but things have changed over the last 4 or 5 weeks. So I don't feel like that's chasing or trying to convince that's what I need. And things have changed in the real estate market. I mean, two major banks have just failed and cash buyers are very hesitant. I just got a call right before we got on here from a lender saying we have great hard money rates ranging from 10% to 15% interest. And I'm like, 15 sounds pretty high. So things are changing. And that's now, I'm not trying to convince them. I'm telling them, from my perspective, this is what I need to make this work. Now they'll either do it or they won't, right? All right, last slide. Constructing offers. There's no reason to make multiple offers unless there is a benefit to you and the seller, right? At least if there's not a benefit to the seller, you need to at least incentivize the seller. And I like to look at it as, hey, what if I make a shorter term type offer and then a longer term? Most likely you're going to take the shorter term every single time. So I got to give you a reason to want to stay in it longer. And that's if I want to be able to stay in it longer. If I don't, then maybe I shouldn't make the short term offer, right? So I got to make these different enough. And there's got to be a reason for them. Otherwise, we're just wasting our time writing multiple offers. Okay, so let's focus on some of these changes. Obviously, purchase price can go up or down, okay? And there may be a slight difference between offers, or it may be significant. Not all of these variables have to change, but some of them do. The term almost always will, right? No reason to make an offer for 5 years at 3% interest and a 5-year term with 3.25% interest. Okay. To me, too much alike. 5-year and 10-year term might work. Monthly payment. Just like you were saying earlier, Cody, that when we figure out that range, now we have some room to work within. So we can have one deal where payments are lower and another one where payments are higher. If payments are higher, more than likely I'm getting in with less money down. And so we can kind of give a little, take a little, right? Down payment. This one's, to me, this is the deal breaker right away. If we can't get the down payment down to where it makes sense or figure out a way that we're going to use private money to offset the larger down payment, this is something that we have to get good at. We've just got to get in light. And if you're able to, all kinds of doors open for you. All kinds of opportunities will. Make sure the longer term offers net or gross more. That's one of the ways I try to incentivize my seller is showing them that if you stay in it 3, 5, 7 more years, you make a whole lot more money by doing so, okay? And then, of course, we've already talked about this. Know what happens at the time of the balloon payment. Where are you going to be with the balance? Make sure that, and those balances may change based on the term, the interest rate, the monthly payment, the down payment, all of them. So make sure that you know where it needs to be and that you can also modify that a bit depending on how much room you have. All right. Any questions? And we'll wrap this episode up.
Nope. This was a good review.
No, I think this is a good approach. Yeah.
Good. All right. So next episode, we'll introduce our example. Cody and Nicole will take center stage, and we'll probably work on two offers, and then we'll keep going with this series until we get it all set up. So go out and create some terms.